I should actually say to everybody, welcome, of course, to tonight's class study class on the 6 through 10 of Swords. And I should have mentioned, I didn't have the tape on before, but I've got it on now. And so everybody is presently getting out of their decks all 10 numbered cards as Swords and the remaining Aces. And we'll work with those in a little while. How many of you guys are still working on finding cards? Anybody? Okay, we have time. And the rest of you, while you're waiting, can contemplate your sins.
What? I don't think we have that much time.
Oh, well, in that case, there's nothing to do. Then you just have to twiddle your thumbs.
I heard the rest of you while you're waiting, and then I heard laughter.
Right, well, okay. Who is this?
Anne Marie.
I am. Oh, you just came in?
No,
you were there.
I'm
okay.
The one who just said, I heard you say the rest of you, and then I heard laughter, and I didn't hear what you said the rest of us should do.
Oh, contemplate your sins.
Oh! And then somebody said they didn't have any, so I said, well, then you got nothing to do but twiddle your thumbs, you know? Somebody just called in a moment ago.
Hey, Marcy. Good evening.
Hey, Marcy. Glad you could make it. Good for you. So
take out the
ace through 10 of swords and the remaining 3 aces.
Hello. Welcome.
Hello. It's Peggy.
Hey, Peggy.
And
good.
Debbie, did I hear your voice?
Yes.
Good.
Okay, good. So I think we're just missing Judy and Donna.
Yep, so far. Okay. So everybody's now basically got their cards out, I hope, and if you don't have them out, you can get them out while we're talking, and it shouldn't be too difficult to do. So, first thing, you know, to kind of get things rolling, did anybody have does anybody have any different sense at all of what the cards are about, or what to make of them, or any different thoughts at all from your usual ones? Since last week's class?
Yes.
What,
I do.
Give me an idea of what that's about.
Well, this is Debbie. I think what stands out the most is the Two of Swords.
Mm-hmm.
So
something changed for you in the way you view that?
Yeah.
From before? Okay. There is my primary interest in doing this. This particular class, the fun that I get out of it, because of course I got to have fun too, and I'm not going to do it very long. I don't stick around long when I'm bored, so if I don't have something new and interesting to do, I don't do it. And so my primary interest in this, what makes me happiest to think about, is giving a different slant on things than what you could normally expect to find. If I can find a legitimate way of changing or modifying or enriching a standard viewpoint, It makes me very pleased, and I judge, and to a certain extent, I judge my success as a teacher by the extent to which I can do that. So, if I manage to do what I'm supposed to do right, then you guys at the end of all this will think differently and see differently than you did when you started, and that's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to actually work on gaining a slightly different perspective, not only of these particular cards of this evening's class, but of tarot in general and the way we understand what the cards mean. Because, of course, I mean, card study is about what the cards mean, right? I mean, what do the cards mean? And I asked that last time and didn't really get much of an answer. So what we're going to work on tonight is we're going to be studying the interpretations and meanings of 5 cards, the 6 through 10 of swords. And in the process, we're going to separate out interpretation from meaning. That's going to happen, hopefully, in such a way that you will never be able to see them as the same thing again. The two words will have such a freight of meaning for you, such differences, that they will stand out and you will really know something from those differences. Now, there is a very big difference, and it's mostly a missed difference or an ignored difference. But after tonight, you won't do that anymore, at least I hope not. So before we actually work on the cards, I want to talk a little bit about interpretation versus meaning. And two interesting words. Anybody want to volunteer to try to explain the difference and see if they understand it the same way I do? Anybody have a sense of is there a difference? And if there is, what is it?
Well, I think there might be
Tell me.
Interpretation is more subjective. It's what you're getting in more of an intuitive feeling when you put the symbols together and what they mean personally to you, where I think meaning is something that's more defined and accepted over, across the board by different traditions.
That's absolutely right. That's exactly correct. The difference between interpretation and meaning mostly is the difference between personal and general, between personal and what you might call theoretical or authoritative. And there's also another thing. When you're talking about meaning in general, you're usually talking about something systematic. When you're talking about interpretation, you're usually talking about seeing something in a context. In other words, if you're doing a reading, a particular card, whatever its meaning, whatever its general meaning might be, in the context of a reading, you have to interpret everything that you know, including general meanings and personal stuff. So, meaning is not connected with context, and interpretation is, and I think everything has to be interpreted depending on what it is that you're doing. However, a great deal of interpretation has nothing whatever to do with meaning. Do you have any sense at all of where I'm going with this? Anybody?
Yeah.
Okay. You'd say that with a slight, well, maybe. Okay. So, the first thing I want to do is to make sure that you understand that interpretation is personal. And as far as I can tell, interpretation consists of every individual person's feelings and their associations and their memories and experiences of reading, and also any psychic impressions that they have at any given moment of whatever card is in front of them. Okay? This is what interpretation comes from. You look at the cards and they mean whatever they mean when you look at them. And, you know, it really comes from looking at the pictures. It's sort of like the comic book version of the classic novels. That's sort of what the pictures are like for most people. It sort of is unnecessary to read the book if you've got the pictures in front of you. That's really what it comes down to. I mean, you don't really why bother with heavy duty 19th century literature when you can just read, you know, a 30 page comic book and get it all in a few quick pictures. And it's not meant to put it down, because pictures do tell stories very, very fast. Unfortunately, they don't tell the whole story. So that's the most thing. The second thing I want to mention about this whole thing, about this business of the pictures, is that when you interpret from pictures, what you're doing in psychology is called projection. That's what this is. It's classic projection. When you look at an image, any image, and let's keep it to tarot, though. When you look at an image on a card, what it does is it evokes things from within you that you think are contained in the picture. So, like in a reading, I don't know if you can sense this. You look at a card, you see something, it makes you think of something, or feel something, associate in some way, remember something, or whatever, and then you think that's in the card, whereas actually not, it's in you. You look at the card, you give the meaning that you have inside yourself back to the card, you then place that into the card so that whenever you look at it again, it tends to evoke the same set of responses. And then what you do in a reading is you apply this projection of yours in a reasonable manner. I mean, it's not unreasonable, in a reasonable manner to the querent and their situation. And the reason you can do that is because there is a certain amount of things that human beings have in common with each other. So if something is a projection for you, if something has a certain meaning and quality and set of associations for you, it's fair to assume that at least some of that will apply to the person sitting across from you. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes it works really, really well, and sometimes not so well. So there is a certain amount of, I wouldn't know what you'd call it, a certain amount of uncertainty. Beginning readers especially are not quite sure that what they're seeing, which they know perfectly well, at least instinctively they know perfectly well is all about them, has anything whatever to do with the person sitting across from them. You'll look at a Three of Swords, for example, and see this big red heart with three swords sticking through it, and it brings up certain feelings in you. Then you look at this person sitting across the table from you, and the card just came up, and you have now got to make that card apply to them somehow. And you don't really know what it means at all. All you know is what it looks like. So, then to help you with that, to get you a little bit past that point, there's another thing that you can add to personal projection, because we all have a repertory of authoritative meanings of one kind or another. And when somebody says, what does the card mean? You say, oh, this means this and this means that. And we get those meanings mostly from books and teachers, from, you know, authorities of one kind or another. And we accept those authorities, and we memorize what we're told, and we attach those things by rote to various cards. And we have those meanings in addition to our projections. And between authority and projection, most people in tarot complete their repertory. And remember, we were talking earlier, I think in last week's class, we were talking about producing an understanding of the cards by means of adding to repertory. How many of you, as far as you can tell, gained either all or most of your repertory through a combination of personal projection and authority?
I don't.
Is there anybody here who feels that they get their repertory of meanings from some other place than that, or in a place in addition to that? That's an interesting pregnant silence. So I take it then that you more or less agree with my description of the process of interpretation. I mean, of interpretation. Does it accord with your sense of things?
Yeah.
Is anybody disagree with that? No. Now, I didn't hear many people say yes, and I heard nobody say no. So I'm assuming that either I left some of you behind, or you're still pondering this one.
Would there be any other place to get them?
Well, one thing that occurred to me is I actually participate in a couple of online discussion groups. And so I guess in the context of you sort of having your own repertory and then also learning from other people's repertories, which in turn may be a combination of other people's repertories and authority figures and projections, I think there's sort of a third element that comes into play.
What's the third element?
The third element would be sort of the intersecting point between not just your own personal authority figures and projections, but then also sort of taking in pieces of other people's repertory.
Right.
That in turn are combinations of their authority figures and projections.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're making then an extended network of
exactly.
The same basic principles. You don't,
right.
you don't depend entirely on your own experience, but you also work with the experiences of other people. And when you hear something that seems to make sense to you in the context of whatever card you're looking at, you say, oh, that's cool, I'll remember that one.
Exactly.
But what you're doing then is simply extending the process. You're simply making it a bit more complex.
Right.
But you haven't changed the level. It's still
that's true.
Projection and authority.
That's true.
Okay.
Where do you put intuition in that?
Intuition comes in also. Now, intuition is an interesting word, because there are two different things that I think most people regard. When most people think of when they hear the word intuition. One is a psychic flash. You'll see a card, and for some unknown reason, having nothing whatever to do with any of the traditions or meanings you've ever learned, it seems that this card means a particular thing at a particular moment because of whatever's going on. You just see something there. And sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong. It usually doesn't have much to do with a card. The card might be a trigger for that. But you can't really depend on it. It might never work like that again. You might never ever see that same reference or energy in the card again, just in this particular situation. That's one aspect of intuition, which is sort of intuitive. I mean, psychic and intuitive are not exactly the same, but they're sort of on the same ballpark. The other usual quality that we call intuition is our, what you could call our subconscious filing cabinets, where we've stored a whole bunch of information sort of out of sight. Our conscious mind is not aware of 99% of all the things we've ever learned or experienced, but it's in there somewhere. And sometimes a given situation coupled with a given card will make a particular file pop out of a drawer, sort of. And it presents itself to you and says, oh, here it is, here's the answer. And it really comes out of a very large repertory of previous experience. So intuitive it isn't. It's kind of a random access memory that that works inside of your subconscious filing cabinets. Nothing particularly different, interesting, or fascinating about that material any more than what you consciously keep. It's just not in your, not conscious. It's just not where you usually can get at it. Does anybody have any sense of any other place where intuition comes from? No? So I gather then that you are more or less in agreement with those two things as being the primary aspects of what we usually talk of as intuitive?
Yeah. You know, it's so relative because divination actually literally means talking with deity. Talking
right.
With
how
God.
Many of you? How many of you have talked to God lately? Well, I mean, in other words, it's a nice thought, but it doesn't happen very often. And in fact, I would say that I don't know. Have any of you? Do any of you remember, in connection with using tarot, have any of you ever had an experience of divinity while using tarot? No. Okay. So my sense is then that it's a word and a phrase and it's a nice one, but it doesn't actually apply for the most part. We have very little access to divinity, and for very good reason. There's a big bunch of shields and baffles between us and divinity. The cards are supposed to be able to get us through that, but that's not really what's happening. We still are dependent on the process. So, assuming that that's true, there's got to be more to it than that, because otherwise we're constantly in the world of the personal, and there's no such thing as objectivity. It can't be done. So when I think last week we began the process of looking at the cards and seeing what's actually in them, because most people don't really know. Even when they look at a card, they don't really pay much attention to what they're looking at. They just kind of get a general idea without paying attention to the details, and there's a lot of meaning in the details. So the first thing to objectivity is to look at what's actually in front of you, and then to somehow put it together with some kind of knowledge. And the question is, what constitutes knowledge in tarot? Personal associations and the blind acceptance of authority do not constitute knowledge, guys. If you have no, if by your own admission, you have nothing to work with but the things I just mentioned, subjective associations and references, plus what you've taken and accepted from authority figures without necessarily asking why, if that's what you've got, there isn't a person here who has even one piece of knowledge. How do you like that? Now that's a challenging statement, no?
Yeah.
And you guys are pretty sophisticated. You're not beginners. Even those of you who have, you know, who call yourselves beginners, you're not. Not by a long stretch. All of you probably, or most of you, can do pretty competent readings. Certainly for yourself, if not for other people. You're not unfamiliar with the cards. You know how things lie. And yet, knowledge is in really short supply. So the question then would be, what is knowledge here? And in tarot, knowledge is a stew. It's a conglomerate. And it's a stew that's made of ingredients that come from several systems of symbolism. That's what it is. Just a series of symbolic systems that are somehow taken apart and put together as tarot images. And these systems are used to construct the images of tarot and to give them meaning. And without these symbol systems and what they understand and know and mean, tarot has no meaning at all. It's just a bunch of pictures that make you think certain things and feel certain things, and it's as random as that. So all the tradition and all the authority in tarot has this knowledge at its root, this tradition of symbol systems. And even though the authorities are, even it's funny, the authority comes from this stuff, but a lot of people who are in authority, people who write books and people who teach, do not actually know this stuff. They're just repeating what they learned, you know, from their authorities who taught them, who learned it from their authorities who taught them. That's not true of all of them, of course. There's actually quite a few authorities out there these days that know more than you would think, but some do not. And if you never ask your teachers why they say what they say, where they got it from, then whatever they teach you is not knowledge, just hearsay. So we mentioned, what we're talking about knowledge here, and we're talking about symbol systems and tradition. So what's this stew of knowledge made out of? There are three main elements, three main ones, and some sub ones under that and some roots under that. The three main elements that make up the pictures and the images of tarot are numerology and astrology and what I can only call iconography, which is sacred images. Those are the three main roots. Okay. So you're probably all familiar to some extent or another with both numerology and astrology, no? Is there anybody here who could say that they have absolutely no familiarity with either of these things? And you've all heard something. And some of you probably have more knowledge than I would know about. So, okay. Question. Do you believe that there's only one approach to either of these disciplines, or to any of the three of them? Well, forget the iconography, because that's a whole different thing. But to numerology and astrology, is there one basic knowledge? Huh?
No,
there isn't. There's some people who think there is. There's some people who think that if they study, say, numerology, whatever system they've got, that they can apply that across the board to any other system, and that isn't so. Let's take astrology. Does Venus, let's say, mean the same thing everywhere to everyone all the time?
No.
Now, how about Pluto? Does Pluto exist in all astrological systems?
No.
Definitely not. Definitely not. How about the number five? Is there one basic system that everybody, you know, uses to understand what five means?
No.
Absolutely not. There's not just one system, and there isn't just one basic understanding. I mean, there's a big difference between the premises, for example, of modern popular systems and esoteric systems. That's the main thing. What most of us have, almost by birthright, is a certain kind of popular astrology. Everybody has a sense of it, or most people do anyway. Numerology, I mean, everybody has sort of a sense of what one means, and two means, and three means, and four means, and stuff like that. You could probably spout some of that. That's popular, and there is actually a system of popular astrology and a system of popular numerology, but it is not the esoteric version of things. Esoteric astrology is different than popular, and it's not, certainly not modern. And esoteric numerology is also different. And esoteric iconography is like whole universes apart. So, the point of all this is that you have to know where the stuff comes from, where these systems generate from, and what they're doing in tarot. So, for example, what numerology do we use in tarot? What kind of astrology? What kind of iconography? Where do these things come from? Which of the various systems of these things do we use? There are specifics. If you know what the specifics are, you at least know where to begin to get real knowledge. If you don't know what those specifics are, you can wander around like in a desert forever, and you'll go around in circles, and you'll never approach tarot at all. So, the numerology of tarot, plain and simple, at least the numerology of modern tarot, tarot as we've known it for the last 150 years, is based on Kabbalah. Maybe it wasn't that way to begin with, but it certainly has been for 150 years. It's based on the numbering system of the Tree of Life, both on the 10 numbers and the 22 paths, and the meanings of those things inside the system of Kabbalah. If you know that's where to begin, looking for the meaning of numbers, then you have a chance. The astrology of tarot has basically an alchemical root. It's the ancient astrology of seven planets. Pluto, Uranus, and Neptune do not exist in the astrology of tarot, except insofar as it's been added by modern systems which don't really understand or care about what the cards actually mean. They just add their own stuff at random. By the way, when you add, let's say you had a really big jigsaw puzzle with 1,000 pieces, and it's a very complicated picture, and it all, when it's done, it all fits together beautifully. Just imagine that you were a newcomer to the picture. You didn't really know the picture all that well, or you didn't really care about it all that much, and you thought that a particular picture of a particular cloud, let's say, would be much enhanced if there were a crow flying in it. So you stuck in a picture of a crow. What does that do to the picture? Even one piece stuck in that doesn't belong in the picture has a tendency to make a mess of the pattern. So when people, for reasons of their own, use systems outside the ones that were used to construct the net of tarot symbolism, stick in other symbolisms, what they do is they disarrange and make somewhat of a mess of the interlocking network of stuff. So there is a certain tightness to the system. So the astrology of seven planets connects with the alchemical metals, the seven alchemical metals, with the seven vibrations of color and sound, and the seven steps of the ladder of spiritual evolution, and a number of other things as well. That's the astrology that we're using in tarot. Modern pop astrology doesn't really fit there, although there's a little bit of an overlap. It's not the base. And then as far as iconography is concerned, iconography, the imagery, the sacred imagery of tarot comes from a number of places. The first and probably most important of them is from the secret societies, Masonry, Rosicrucianism, that kind of thing. They have a tremendous wealth of visual symbolism, and a lot of that can be found in tarot. For people who don't know those things, it's invisible. You could look at a card and have no clue what you're looking at. The second thing are the sacred images of Egypt and of Greece and of Jewish mythology. There are all kinds of references to those things. There is alchemy, esoteric Christianity, sacred geometry. Those are the things that you can find as make up a good chunk of the visual imagery of tarot. Once you've combined those three things, the numerology, the astrology, and the iconography from those places, you have about 95% of the tradition from which all authority springs in tarot. So when you look at these cards, if all you get to see is the picture, granted the picture evokes certain things, the pictures were constructed to evoke those things, but you have no knowledge. Okay, so we now have two different things we're about to do. The first thing is, the first question that we're going to answer is, how do we interpret the cards? When you do a spread, even if you have knowledge, you have to still interpret. So the interpretation includes the knowledge, and as well as all the personal associations and whatever you've learned from authorities on authority, and it includes what you actually get from the images. So interpretation is one thing. But where do the pictures come from? That brings us to the second question, and what do the cards mean? That's the main thing. And when we deal with the meanings of the cards, we're going to include the systems and the parts of the systems that are used to create this imagery. And the network of the systems and all their attributions and references, all their links and connections, those are the original source of meaning in tarot and of all tradition and authority in tarot. So let's actually start by doing some interpretation. Before we even set out the cards, without looking at them, can you do this without looking, do you think? Can you tell me, for example, let me see, who should I ask first? Who should I volunteer here first? How about Kelly? Can you tell me what the Six of Swords means without looking at the cards?
Means or interpret?
Interpret it for me. What does it mean to you?
Going your way. Possibly,
being snuck up on, snuck
away from, kind of thing.
Okay, good. And let me see. Let's see, Jenna. What's your interpretation of the Six of Swords?
For me, the Six of Swords is about moving away from old ideas, making new decisions that you hope will take you to a more balanced emotional situation.
Why do you say what you say?
I say that because of the way that the water is.
How is the water?
On the first part of the card, the water is more, there's a lot more movement, like there's a lot more emotion.
Mm-hmm.
But she's trying to head towards a place where the water is smoother.
Who's the she?
Or I consider that a girl. It might not be, though. That's just a...
Right, so there again we get to the business of make sure to begin your interpretation with what's actually in front of you. Because what happens, just like what you did, there's a natural tendency to make quick interpretations that really don't necessarily have any basis in fact. Maybe yes, maybe no. Can't really tell by looking. Okay, good. So, Marcy, what's your sense of the Six? What's the Six about for you?
Well, in the last half hour, I just realized how much and how little I don't know. So anything that I'm about to say, I used to interpret it as somebody having a lot of family responsibility and being very emotionally tied to some relationship, and that they were moving away from that towards something bigger and better.
And why? Well, let's take the various parts. Why do you think it's a family relationship?
From my years of doing it, that I found that a lot of times when I had sixes, it had to do with family. It had to do with relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the water and the swords, I related to that. It was very much something that was happening in the mind, and something that, even though it wasn't a cup, it was very emotionally draining.
Where does the emotion come from? What kind of emotion do you see here?
Well, it was just kind of collecting from different readings that I had, that
mm-hmm.
people who had picked this card.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that I just kind of made up myself from my own interpretation from doing readings.
Okay, so a lot of this is experiential. You have experienced this in readings. You found it to work, and so you've accumulated this tradition of your own.
Exactly, from my own experience.
Good. Okay. Let me see. Who else do we need? Does anybody want to volunteer on something new and different about the Six of Swords that we haven't mentioned yet?
I could throw in a little more.
Okay.
Six is the concept of Tiferet, which is the dying god sacrificing one thing for something that may be better.
Where do you get that from?
The Kabbalah.
Did you read this somewhere, or did you...
Read it somewhere.
Okay. All right.
It's the balance of the two triangles,
mm-hmm.
And it's air,
mm-hmm.
Thoughts, movements, thoughts, boundaries. So it would be perhaps changing your thoughts, moving away from something, being willing to change one thing for another, but it would
mm-hmm.
be on an intellectual plane.
Okay.
Or part of an intellectual plane.
So we're not talking about moving away from something in any physical way, or are we? Is that included or not?
It could depend on the other cards.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. That's a good beginning. We'll go on to let's take a look at actually what some of the systems are that are built into this. Does everybody actually have a Six of Swords face up in front of them at this point? If not, do it now. Take a look at the Six of Swords, and what we're going to do before we do anything else. Let me finish the Six of Swords, and then we'll continue. The Six of Swords has, as do all of the minor arcana, an esoteric title. The esoteric title is a word or a phrase that conveys, in very succinct way, what the astrology and numerology of that card are about. And the esoteric title of the Six of Swords is the Lord of Earned Success. Isn't that an interesting title given the picture? Anybody have any idea where that comes from?
Do you think it's with all the swords in the boat that there's been a lot of planning and things have been
good try. Okay, I'll tell you, I won't torture you with it. I'll give you the sense of it. First of all, the astrological attribution of this card is Mercury in Aquarius. You see the rough water that's on the right-hand corner of the card?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's what it is actually is a reference to Aquarius. It's a graphical reference to Aquarius with the parallel wavy lines, which are the actual graphic form of Aquarius, you know, the sign of Aquarius. When you take a look at the imagery of any card, somewhere in that card, at least in this deck, there will be a reference to the astrology of the card. That's a reference to Aquarius. The Mercury part is represented in part by the swords at the front of the boat. Those swords represent the leadership of the mind. That is, the boat is going somewhere, but it's being led, it's being directed by the mind. By Mercury. And Mercury is also the boat, that is, the messenger, somebody who carries something from one place to another. There's a sense of movement with Mercury. And those two things are represented there. So that's one thing to know. The second thing is that the numerology of this card, the six, comes from, as somebody pointed out, from Teferet. By the way, the way to pronounce that is Teferet. In Hebrew, the accent of any word will either be on the last syllable or the next to the last syllable. If it's a three-syllable word, it will never be on the first syllable. It's just a rule of grammar. So anyway, Teferet is the sixth Sephira. It's the sixth position on the Tree of Life, and it has the implication of success. It has the implication of good fortune and success. It's a wonderful place on the Tree of Life to be. All the sixes have success in their title. The Lord of Earned Success. Why earned? If you remember the Five of Swords, Five of Swords was engaged in some kind of a battle. The Six of Swords is moving away from that. The Six of Swords is the successful passage through difficult times. You have earned the right to move forward. You've earned the right to go onwards. You've passed through the difficulties and the anxieties and the fears of before. And by your own efforts, you have learned to move forward. The boatman is, the boatman and the boat both are references to the ability to direct your own fortunes. The energy and the ability to go where you wish to go. So what we're looking at here is simply the moving onwards or past prior difficulties. And it's the successful completion or going through a difficult time that we're looking at here, which is one of the reasons why the figures in the boat look like they're sort of sad. It's also the reason why there's so much energy in the boatman, so much choppy water at the sides, and no clear destination at the front. You haven't actually got necessarily a particular goal in mind. All that's happened is you've gotten out of a sticky situation, and you have earned the right to move forward. That's all you've got. Therein lies the essential meaning of the Six of Swords from the point of view of numerology and astrology. Okay. What I would like you to do now is take the four aces, and I want you to arrange them in the order of your preference. Just put them down the way you like them best, with the one that you like the most at the left, and the other is in descending order of preference off to your right. So you make a horizontal line from left to right. Do that. I don't imagine it will take you too long to accomplish that.
Because you got to find the aces first.
Well, there is that. There is that. If you haven't found the aces already, do that. And then after you've done that, remember where the Ace of Swords was. You'll have to remember because you're going to need the Ace of Swords to put it in the 10-number array, which is simply the order of preference of the 10 cards of swords, the 10-numbered cards of swords. And what I want you to do is to arrange the 10-numbered cards of swords in the order of preference, starting with the most liked at the left and going towards the right with the least liked at the right. Do it for whatever reason you wish. It doesn't make any difference why you like them. Just arrange them in order of preference. How you doing? Has anybody not done that yet? Still working on it?
Still working.
Okay, take another minute.
Easier to do the array.
Right, it gets more, actually an interesting sort of way, the more you know, the harder it is to do. Because what we've done, the reason why it's harder is because we have begun to interject knowledge into the mix. Before you were working entirely with projection. Now you're working with a little bit of knowledge added to that. Not that the projection goes away, but the knowledge is added, so it's a little harder. It's a little more complex. For those of you who are waiting, if you're not all finished yet, take the Ace through Five of Swords, leave them in the position where you put them in your array, but turn them face down, so that only the 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 are face up in their positions in the array.
Okay.
Can you please repeat that?
Yeah, what I want you to do is to turn the Ace through 5 face down. Leave them where they are, but turn them face down. That way, only the 6 through 10 will actually be face up. Those are the only ones you want to be paying attention to at this point. How many of you have not done that yet? Okay, I guess we're on target then. Good. Then I'm going to give you a couple of interesting things to realize. In Kabbalistic numerology, there is a certain natural order in which things occur. There are four worlds that are born one at a time, and the order in which the worlds are born are represented by wands first, cups second, swords third, and pentacles last. The reason being that the world of, that wands represents the world that is understood through the element of fire. First there's fire, then there's water, then there's air, and then there's earth. That's supposedly the traditional order in which the world was created. Now, to understand positions, you don't necessarily have to, you don't know what's in those positions. The first position would normally be the fiery one, the energetic one. The second position, the third position are relatively horizontal. They flow. Both water and air flow, and they tend to be horizontal. And earth, the last position, tends to be heavy, cold, and dark. So anything that, if you were to divide anything up into fours, when you're dealing with an order of preference, so you can take a look now at where your sword is in the array of swords. In the elemental array, that a group of four aces is called the elemental array. Take a look at where that sword is, and you will see by where it is how much energy and light it has in it, how much darkness and heaviness it has in it, how much flow it has in it. I won't ask you right now to tell me where that is. Just notice where it is. Now when you take a look at your array of aces, I mean at your array of numbers rather, the number array, the 10 cards of swords, you'll have a sense of what swords means to you in general by where it is in your elemental array. Okay? Whatever is in first position is lightest, brightest, most filled with energy. Whatever is in last position is heaviest, darkest, coldest, and most solid and real. The two things in the middle share the qualities of flow and horizontality. So the first position reaches up, the last position reaches down. The two in the middle go sideways. Now if you take a look at the 10 numbers, just look at where the 6 through 10 cards are, the ones that you're looking at. If any of them are in the first three positions of the 10, the first three positions represent that which is lightest, brightest, and reaching upwards. The last three positions are those which are reaching downwards, which are heaviest and darkest and coldest. And the ones in the middle have flow. That's a very general thing. I'm not going to analyze it for you. I just want you to be aware, now that you have done what you've done, where you have put things and more or less what they mean to you, because a lot of meaning, not meaning so much, a lot of interpretation is done in context. So what we're doing is putting swords and each of the cards of swords in personal context. Okay, now let's look at the 7. We've done the 6. Let's look at the 7. Debbie, what's the 7 about for you?
To me, it looks like he's taking something that isn't his, and he feels like he's getting away with something.
So is the card.
And he can't even carry. He can't even carry it. He's taken more than he needs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a circus atmosphere, but he's taken more than he needs.
Well, if the card came up in a spread, or if you were to do a one card reading about something and the 7 of swords came up, what would it be about? I mean, just in general.
The way I see it right now, it's perhaps a craftiness. Maybe he feels he's getting away with something.
Okay. Where in your 10 card array is he? What position?
5.
Okay, interesting. I won't say any more. It's self-explanatory. Good. Let me see. How about Judy? Are you here? No, Judy didn't make it this time. Let me see. Marcy? No. I'll save you for a second, Marcy. Linda, what is the 7 about for you?
The
seven energy to me is, I guess I would interpret this in terms of where the, you know, kind of the sevens energy in terms of the mental struggle. And I guess any kind of, I mean, the energy of the car to me is all about kind of absconding and working alone. And I guess in terms of interpretation, I would see it more as opening up, communicating more, listening more, working with others more.
That's interesting. Good.
Difficulty.
Good. Excellent. Where in your array is that?
It's also five.
Okay. Good. Let me see. Gene, what's your sense of the seven?
There's something of the trickster about him to me. I don't know whether that's because of the carnival atmosphere in the background, but he seems to, you know, be delighted in having gotten away with something.
Mm-hmm.
And there doesn't seem to be, there seem to be figures on the left, you know, background.
Mm-hmm. There are.
And they don't seem to be noticing him, nor he doesn't seem to notice them, but I have the feeling that he's gotten away with something, and I don't see where he has any trouble carrying them, because the two in his right hand are just being held by fingers,
mm-hmm.
And so are the three in his left arm.
So you're
he's not clutching them.
Your sense of the interpretation of this card is primarily, it primarily comes from what the image evokes in you,
mm-hmm.
when you look at it.
And he's like Loki.
Okay. Do you have any memory of having read any of the meanings of this card?